Okay, our agenda is here. On the agenda today, we've got an update from the web application security discussion we had yesterday with that group on credential management. We have to talk about the credential management API extension that we're working on. Greg, I think we need to discuss the graph normalization stuff, just do some loose planning on how that's going to happen with the test suite. And then talk about focus. We have a new participant, Jordan, who's going to do an introduction at the very beginning of the call. And I think there was one other thing that Dave Lane wanted us to add to the agenda, which was a slight modification we needed to be made to the Open Badges JSON-LD context. Let's see. Okay. Who just joined? 908 area code. Eric. Hey, Eric. Let's see, 1C8 is Eric. Okay. Any other updates or changes to the agenda before we get started? 661 area code, is that you, Sonny? No.
Hi there, it's Carrie. I think that's me on Skype.
Okay, Carrie. Carry 661 8 is Carry. 1CA is Sunny. Sunny, you're on through SIP, is that right?
Sorry, I was muted. Yes, I am on through SIP.
Got it. Okay, all right. Okay, so no updates or changes to the agenda. If not, we can go ahead and get started. First topic up is an introduction to Jordan. Jordan, what was your last name again? I'm sorry.
Windsor?
W-I-N-D-S-O-R?
That's correct.
Okay. Go ahead, Jordan.
My name is Jordan Windsor. Eric agreed to let me listen in on your conference today, so I'm just interested to see how evolving technologies impact your business, and interested to see what you guys are going to do with this credential. So thank you very much for allowing me to sit in on this.
Which organization are you with?
Oh, I actually work for Lexis of Richmond. I'm just an outsider with a great deal of interest.
Okay, great. Welcome to the call.
Thank you.
These calls are open, so feel free to join at any time. Glad to have you here. Okay. Anything else before we add the second ad hoc agenda item, which is the Open Badges XSD string issue? Okay. Who just
Richard joined?
Okay. Richard, morning.
Morning.
Okay, so Dave Lane, I don't think, is here. Great, thank you, Nate. We detected an issue with the Open Badges context last week. I think the root of the issue was that we had suggested Nate mark something up in a certain way, and the output of that surprised us in our systems. I believe Nate has just pasted a demonstration of the issue into the IRC channel. I think the issue is dealt with. Is that right, Nate, or whatever?
I haven't made the edit to the context file yet, but I have confirmed some of the behavior that Dave reported, and I can make that change today and push it live to the web as soon as I've got it through, and I can check it past you and Dave before I make it final.
Okay, sounds great. I mean, is there anything else we need to coordinate on this issue, or you'll just coordinate with us and we'll push it out? And
You think we have a couple minutes on the call to talk about it real quick, I think it would just be sort of handy link data background for the rest of the Badges folks who are on.
Sure. Dave, are you in a position that you can talk about it longly?
Yeah, I can summarize the issue. So when the Open Badges context, the new one, was first put out, I believe, Nate, you were adding so for certain term definitions, I think you were trying to restrict those terms to only apply to strings. And by to do that, you were setting the type in the term definition to an XSD string. Unfortunately, the JSON-LD processing rules for expansion and compaction don't look, they consider at type to be completely opaque. They don't interpret the value in any way. And what that means is if you have in your JSON, if you just have plain JSON strings for your values instead of JSON strings that also are accompanied by an at type of XSD string, the processor will see them in expansion compaction as two different things. The processor will not automatically see a JSON string as an XSD string because expansion and compaction know nothing about XSD types. XSD types and are only interpreted by the to and from RDF algorithms in JSON-LD. So that's the only place where they're actually interpreted and understood. So in effect, what happens is if you have a JSON-LD context and you put term definitions in there, say you put a definition for the term name and you say it only applies to things with type XSD string, if you have incoming data that does not have the type XSD string on it, but it's just a regular JSON string, and you try to compact it using that context, that term will not be selected. So your compacted output will not compact a property down to the term name. It'll just leave it as a full URL, or it will potentially use some other rule in your context. And that's what was unexpected, because people generally use XSD string, or there's a number of other ones like RDF Lang string, as types that are meant to refer to basic strings. And JSON strings don't map to that in the expansion compaction rules. So the automatic translation will not happen. And what ends up happening is you get this unexpected result where some of your properties are not compacting down to terms as you would like them to. So for now, in JSON-LD 1.0, the correct solution for this is to if you want a term to be selected for values that are strings, basic JSON strings, don't put at type XSD string. Just accept that you can't restrict it to just strings. The term will also be selected for other things if that happens to be in your data. However, that's okay because contexts are not meant to be used as validation. There are ways of describing the meaning of things. And if you need to do validation, that's a separate step that you could use JSON schema for or something else, some other tool.
And we are not trying to use the context for any type of validation. We're just putting it in there, I think, just to provide as much information as we could to a developer looking at it to, you know, like, here's what you expect to find. Let's see. So I have a question on other types, I guess. Is there any useful information I can put in the context about the type of those items, if other than their ID?
You should, whenever you're creating term definitions in the context, you should think of them as definitions that a processor is going to use to decide whether or not to take a property and replace it with a certain term. And so the algorithm at a high level, the algorithm that happens is the JSON-LD processor is going to see a property come in with a value. It's going to look at the value and see if the value matches the definition in your context for a particular term. If it does, it'll replace that property with that term. That's really the only way you should think about how the context is working. It's best not to think of it as, I'm going to include type information in the context to try and provide hints for people. You should think of it as, if you want to restrict the types of values that will values associated with properties that will compact down to a certain term, if you want to restrict it by type, then put the type in there. But what that means is there is a hard restriction. If that type does not exist in the data, then the term will not be selected. If you want the information to compact down. Regardless of the type, don't put the type in there.
So that was a very clear explanation. Thanks. And then so one little follow-up. If there is a, you know, say there is an expanded document that has some type information indicated in it as well as the values, will that properly be selected by the new context that doesn't include the type information? And will that type information be preserved in the compacted form?
Yes. So what will happen is if you have a term that does not is not restricted by type, then if that's the only term available for the property that is associated with a value, then that value will be the property associated with that value will compact down to the term, and the value will stay the same. It'll be an at value, and then the actual value of the thing, and then at type. Do you understand what I'm saying? The value will be the expanded form, but the term will compact down. So I it might be better if I actually type that out.
No, it's cool. I understood it. But yeah, if I don't know, okay. If you think the minutes need some improvement, go ahead and correct them.
Yeah, I'll just type it real quick.
Cool. Thanks. I think that's all. I'll submit a updated context to you in a couple hours, and you can just double check it as best you can visually. And then we'll put it into production and start relying on it. The behavior you described without specifying a type in the context is exactly what we want for the Open Badges context, so we'll go forward with that.
Greg, you're on the queue.
Yeah, I'll just note that there is other type of information you can put in a document containing a JSON-LD context. It's not used by any JSON-LD processors, but for example, in many of the vocabularies I work on, typically the context is also published at the location of the vocabulary where you might otherwise say an RDFS definition for that vocabulary. And it's entirely consistent to be able to have the body of that document in fact contain such a RDFS vocabulary definition, although it's completely unused by any JSON-LD processor. It is a way to be able to document other aspects of your vocabulary and can be useful for other tool sets that are doing, say, some form of a entailment or validation based upon the specification of that vocabulary.
Yeah, thanks, Greg. In addition, we actually are using that feature in our context. I put a link in there, and you can see at the bottom there's a little validation array that has some different links to JSON schema to actually do that kind of structural validation that the context should not be doing. And then hopefully in the future we can figure out how to build that kind of cool vocabulary features and type checking into our web server, so that we can deliver the full vocabulary and machine readable. Cool. Manu, I think this might close out the item unless you know someone else who has comments.
Okay. No, I mean, I guess the only point I'll make is that if the first description of the technical nature of it was confusing to folks, you're not alone. It is a fairly esoteric part of JSON-LD. It caught us, even caught us by surprise. So it caught the designers by surprise. Then it should be understood that it would probably catch most everyone by surprise. Okay. If there's nothing else on this item, we'll go on to our first actual agenda item, which is the Web Application Security Credential Management API. Dave Longley, do you want to do an update on this in iScribe, or do you want me to do the update?
I can just give a brief update. That's fine.
Okay, go ahead.
So Manu and I were on the Web App Sec call yesterday where they were talking about the progress of the Credential Management API. We had a few minutes at the very end of the call to kind of discuss what's going on with the Credential CG and Web Payments IG and our interest in the Credential Management API. There is a link that kind of summarizes what we were telling, what we told them on the call. It's a link here that is an email from Manu. Essentially, we were talking to them about there are a couple of concerns that we have with the existing API and how it can be extended to support our use cases in the future. And this mostly has to do with a difference between how the current API is, designed to support this notion of same origin credentials, where you go to a website, you enter like a username and a password, and the website at that moment generates a username slash password credential for you. And you can store them in your browser and then provide it at a later point in time to re-authenticate yourself. And the way that the API is designed is it's kind of focusing primarily on this notion that you would go to a website, get a credential from that website, and then give it back to that same website, and that's the interaction you would have. Our work is a lot more expansive than that, with the notion that you can go to any number of different third-party websites and be issued a credential. And these credentials might involve lengthy processes that you have to go through. You might have to pass like a driver's exam to get a digital driver's license issued to you. And then you can take that digital driver's license and go to a different site entirely and provide it to, for instance, register to vote or something of that nature. So the point is that our future work is going to involve what we've been calling cross-origin credentials, these credentials that come from a variety of different sites that you need to share with another site. And so our concern has to do with making sure that the way that this API is modeled and the data that it's using is modeled will work with the notion of cross-origin credentials. And so that means it means two things. One of the things it means is we need to make sure that a credential and the entity that the credential is about aren't intrinsically the same thing. You need to be able to say an entity can exist on its own and have a number of different credentials about it from a number of different sources that have been issued by a number of different issuers. The current model kind of just says a credential is kind of who you are. The credential is you. You are the entity, and that's the model. And in our world, it's the two are a little bit split. The other thing that we need to make sure works is that you can go off to a remote website to fetch your credentials. So credential storage doesn't have to happen just in your browser. Your browser should be able to locally cache credentials that have been requested and that you've authorized to sites previously. However, the sort of one true source for your credentials needs to be a third-party website or some third-party storage container that you can communicate with and retrieve your credentials from. Otherwise, there's going to be you're going to lock all of your credentials up in your browser, and it won't. Unlike the current API, where it's easy to regenerate a credential, you just enter your username and password again, and that's your credential, and that's really all they've really covered. The credentials we're talking about, you couldn't easily regenerate them. You have to go take your driver's test again. You can't do that every time you want to change your browser, or you get up and you walk over to a different computer, use the new browser over there. So we have to make sure that remote storage is going to work in the browser. For credentials, we need to make sure that you can use cross-origin credentials, and we need to make sure that we're talking with the web app sec group and with the browser manufacturers to figure out how the browsers are going to implement these and make the screens work. So what we're going to be doing this week is providing a more concrete proposal to the web app sec group for exactly what it is, exactly how we would extend their existing API and point out where the pain points are and where we don't understand exactly where we need feedback from the browser manufacturers in terms of how this stuff should work. We didn't get a whole lot of feedback from them when we presented some of this information, primarily because we were able to do it in about 6 minutes, so there wasn't much to say, and then the call had to end. We've gotten some feedback on the mailing list, so there's going to be some discussion there. And then we'll be syncing back up either late this week or on the next call with them in terms of how we're going to move forward. That's it. Go ahead, Nate.
Cool. So I had a quick question. Like, it seems to me that when the web AppSec folks are thinking about this API, they're thinking really it's all about authentication, making sure that they know a user is the person that they expect that person to be. And that's an important part of our credentials as well. We can't have someone presenting someone else's credentials and say, hey, look what I've earned. It's someone else's driver's license. But we have an idea of like authorization to do more interesting things. Like once you've decided, okay, yeah, I am Nate, and I have some credentials to present you, those credentials that I'm showing you could change how you treat me because they could allow you to authorize me to do more interesting things on your system. Where it seems like their API mostly maintains today's status quo where that authorization decisions will be made based on data that's all internal to the service that you're using, that it already knows who you are and what it's going to let you do. Where we're hoping for a future where a service can switch on the credentials that you're providing more easily and say, oh yeah, okay, you are authorized to do the things that you want to do here.
Yes, yeah, that's exactly right. And what we've actually found is that the way we've modeled it, where you can essentially just provide different sets of credentials to get authorization to take different actions, is a broader, it covers pretty much every use case you could think of for using a credential, and the login case is just one tiny case that fits into that broader scope. So we found that login is just a way of saying, well, provide me with a credential that's good enough to assert that that a certain identifier is associated with me. That's really all login is. And if sites want to use that and then collect their own information and run services like they do with the current status quo, that'll work just fine. But we also have the notion that you were describing, where these other websites out there can issue you credentials that can be shared and used on a variety of different sites, where these sites effectively ask for a subset of information about you and a set of credentials that prove that that information is true to allow you to take a variety of different actions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so because it seems that they're really only understanding this credentials API in terms of authorization, is it proving to be a challenge to convince them that credentials can be used for a completely like different kind of decision as well?
To a certain extent, yes, but I think the main problem is we haven't had all that much time talking with the entire group. This was actually the first time we were able to talk with the entire group, or at least everyone who was present on the call. We've previously really only talked mostly with Mike West, who's the main editor on the spec. So I think there's going to be more time to have those discussions, but there's also the issue that we don't want to expand their scope, and there's this process issue we're bumping up against where they're only charged to do so much. So it's sort of like we can't really talk about too much without them feeling like we're going way off asking them to do a lot more than they're charted to do. So we can only discuss so much to get to the point where we can say, yes, your API, will it be extensible enough for us to cover this broader design that kind of actually would cover everything?
Cool, interesting.
Yeah, and that's, I think, one of the big unfortunate things in how this is coming about, because we just found out, I think it might have been Eric that sent me an email, or maybe it was Melvin. We just found out that there is a new working group that has to do with account selection at W3C. So now there's a credential management API, there's a credential CG, and there's an account selection working group. And there are going to be two new hardware authentication working groups starting up in the next year. So now there are five groups at W3C that are all kind of sort of working on the same thing, and it's looking like W3C is not doing as good of a job coordinating all these groups together as they should be. So part of what we're trying to do is we're trying to go in and connect all the groups together in an attempt to try and stop a disaster from happening, which is five different APIs that kind of do five different ways of asserting a credential. You know, there's a credential management API way, there's account selection, there's what we're doing, and that kind of stuff. So W3C process is written such that people can't go, working groups or should not go outside of their charter. And so the only thing that we can really discuss in the web application security group is this login thing. They're not chartered to deal with anything broader, and because they have chosen, because that is their charter, they are looking at the solution in a fairly constrained way. And so the only thing we can really talk about there is their extensibility portion of their API. Right. We have to design the solution in this group and see if it fits into the extensibility part of their API. And if it doesn't, we'll give them feedback to say, hey, you know, we know we want to use your API, but we can't extend it to cover our use case. Please change the extensibility portion of your spec. So that's really what this whole discussion is kind of going to revolve around over the next couple of weeks to months. Greg, you're on the queue. Thanks,
sorry, I was negligent in just inscribing what you just said. Typically, there are activities. The W3C has activity areas that cover broad sets of things that are all interrelated. For instance, data activity, where a lot of the work on data formats happens. And there's an activity lead, I think, who's nominally responsible for coordinating the actions of these different groups. In this case, I imagine that these groups span several different formal W3C activities, but nonetheless, it does seem like there is some coordinating entity necessary for this, and perhaps there's other areas that are similarly having a lot of development lately that require inter-activity coordination. Has there been any discussion, or do you have any insight into that process?
Yeah. Right now, it's that the person in charge of coordinating that stuff is overloaded, and so they've missed a lot of the details on work that's happening separately, and in some cases, they don't see how they overlap. So, for example, you know, the credential management API, even that group believes that they don't really need to do anything about the credentials we're doing here because they're only chartered to work on login, and how could login affect what we're doing in any way, shape, or form. Now, it's not the entire group's view that that's the case, but there's fundamental disagreement on how much of an overlap there is. There's some people inside W3C that are saying there is really no overlap, and that we can build all these APIs separately and they will come together through some kind of unifying API in the future. But I think at least Dave Longley and my position is that is completely the wrong way to look at this. There is a tremendous amount of overlap, and if the groups keep continuing in the direction that they're continuing, we're just going to end up with four different APIs that effectively do the same thing, and we're going to have to maintain all four of those APIs for the next 10 to 20 years. So there's currently a very there's a debate in W3C about what we're doing about this credentialing stuff and what the APIs are and how deeply the browser vendors should play a role and all that kind of stuff. So conversations are ongoing. I think the Web Payments IG is going to be making some recommendations to W3C. And I think fundamentally we just need to get three key W3C people in a room for 2 hours where we can tell them that we see a potential disaster happening in the next 2 to 3 years. So we have to start coordinating this work more closely. But that's all the insight I really have.
Yeah, I think fundamentally the work we're doing here encompasses what those other groups are doing. Those other groups are focusing on more narrow subsets or more narrow use cases that fit into the the larger design that we have for credentials on the web. I think you can solve those problems with what we're doing, and hopefully we can teach people that that's true, and you know, charter a group to do this credentials work and kind of absorb some of that other stuff.
The other danger, that's very true. The other danger is that, I mean, for example, Dave and I have to go off and invent this new credential management extension this week, and we're incredibly pressed for time. And so there's a certain aspect of this where we are falling behind. We because there are going to be four groups, it is going to become increasingly difficult for us to do the proper messaging so that we don't accidentally get run over by those groups, because those groups are going to be dedicated technical working groups that are only focusing on login or credential management, on account selection. And because they have dedicated technical resources to do it now, they're actual working groups, they have to demonstrate progress, so they have to hear back from us within a week to 2 weeks. And in this current iteration, it's been a month since we said there was a problem on the FPWD, and they just came back to us last week and said, where are you guys? Where's the, you know, extension proposal you promised us? And we've been swamped, right? And so there's so much happening in this space that it's going to be very difficult for us to continue to respond to these types of it's just going to be difficult for us to respond. Dave and I only have so many hours in the day, and when we have to go off and design an entire API in a week to get it back to them to convince them not to do something that's bad, it takes away from time that we need to do recruiting and executive summaries and getting the credential work up and running. So we're having a difficult time making sure that the right priorities are where they need to be. So all that said, we really need help on the other documents, like the use cases and the recruiting document and technical architecture. So we need some other folks to take point on those documents. Otherwise, we're not going to be ready when W3C management is ready to ask us to start work on the credentials working group, the official work. So we need 2 to 3 volunteers to step up to start editing documents. Otherwise, we're gonna fall behind to the point that we may not be able to recover from it. That's my concern. I don't think we're there yet, but we will definitely be there in the next month if we don't start getting these use cases documents done. Okay, any comments, questions, suggestions? Nate's saying Sonny, Kerry, and he can work on the use cases document this week. Thank you very much. That will help immensely.
I can work on it next week.
Brian, is that you?
Yep.
Okay, great. Fantastic. The other thing that's blocking us right now is we have the executive summary, but we have an executive summary for W3C members, but we do not have a pitch document for non-W3C members. So we have to start this recruiting phase this week or next week. I'm going to send out, I think, about 75 emails this week to W3C members to get them to start getting support, internal support at W3C. But we really need a document that folks can send to new potential W3C members, a half-page document, to get it so that folks in this group can take it out and show it to non-W3C members and get them to at least say they're interested in joining the work at the W3C if we have an official credentials working group. Okay, but that stuff's a bit later in the process. Oh, sorry, later in the agenda. Does anyone have any other questions or concerns about the credential management API and where it's going? As Longley said, we're putting together a proposal for them this week. We're just going to have to sit down and do it, and we will know more over the next week or two after we get that to them. The other thing that's somewhat problematic is if you follow that thread, the response to the thread is effectively please do a survey of OpenID, Connect, Persona, Browser ID, SAML, and every other identification mechanism that has ever been over the last 15 years and tell us why those didn't work and why the credential stuff is going to work. So, I mean, there's a huge asymmetry between the questions that they can ask and our responses to them. It's going to take us a week to prepare that response. And it's something that we need. We need to be able to justify the work that we're doing. But again, who's going to sit down and do the research and write that thing up? So if there are any volunteers to do that, that would be very helpful as well. Okay, so if there's nothing else on credential management API, we can jump into the next thing, which is graph normalization. Thank you, Greg, for scribing. Greg, would you mind doing this topic?
Yeah, sure. I guess this is probably prompted a little bit because I started working on my own implementation of graph normalization and ran into some questions and issues. This is a reference to my GitHub repository in which the 2015 version of the graph, the data set normalization algorithm.
Let me interrupt for a quick second, Greg. Just for those that are new, the RDF graph normalization stuff is required for us to be able to digitally sign these credentials. So it's a piece of technology that we need to do digital signatures on credentials so that people can trust them. Go ahead, Greg.
Yeah. So a part of what I ran across is that there are actually two different normalization algorithms that are in use right now. There is a 2012 version of this algorithm and a 2015 version, which are quite similar. Dave could obviously speak to that much more, but not identical, and therefore the test results that are currently described within the JSON-LT test suite do not apply to this. So my thought was, well, probably this means it's time to create a separate repository which focuses on normalization, which could then serve as the basis for the home for a normalization micro working group or whatever it might be. There's precedence for this. There is a W3C group on GitHub where different working groups maintain repositories that are focused for that and for issue management and likewise. But the GH pages can also serve as a sort of a web home for these things as well. The CSV on the web working group I work with uses this, and all of the editor's drafts, for instance, are available through there, as is the test suite. So it was my thought that it's probably time for us to separate out the normalize work, at least, into its own repository so that we can start to move it forward and get it prepared. I think it's also, because it is so specialized and it is really probably not in the core expertise of this particular group, having it as a separate repository can allow sort of the conversation issues to develop on their own and perhaps be moved to someplace else that might make sense going forward.
I'm in favor of moving it over to its own repository and moving over the test suite and so on. So I'm in agreement with Greg.
Plus one from me, Manu.
Okay, well, then I can take the action to do that. I would think we can probably do that. We could do that under the JSON-LT GitHub organization, or is there another home you think is more appropriate, Manu? I think it's premature to do it under the W3C organization, which requires staff support.
Yeah, let's just put it on JSON-LT for now, and we can always split the history out later if we need to via Git filter branch.
Just in terms of where my implementation is, it there are, what, 50-some tests probably. I pass all but seven of them, taking some liberties on the particular hash algorithm being used. So Dave and I are scheduled after this call to start to go through them, and hopefully we'll have two completely independent implementations of this that are passing all the tests for too much longer.
Woo-hoo. That is awesome. Thank you, Greg. Did you find, was it easy to implement or difficult to implement? I know it's a fairly vague general question, but do you feel like it's something that implementers that are not as talented as you would be able to do easily?
It was pretty easy to implement. I do think some of the nomenclature used within the algorithm descriptions can be confusing, and we might improve those going forward. But it really is a pretty straightforward algorithm. I would say, in fact, I'd say much more straightforward than the canonicalization algorithms used for determining graph isomorphism. I think it works pretty well.
Yeah, I was going to note it looked like it's like under 250 lines in Ruby, roughly.
It sounds about right. It's pretty small. I do think that the algorithm descriptions are probably too implementation focused and don't deal enough with sort of a big picture of exactly what is going on, something that is perhaps in between a mathematical proof and a sort of by the numbers implementation. Something
I agree.
To come out with, but having something described that can be implemented and yield independent results is really key. But describing it separately, having a number of different examples and use cases with a sort of a graphical walkthrough of how the algorithm's working, I think will be key before it can be considered finished. But given that there really isn't a working group that's whose mission is pushing this forward right yet, I think where we are is quite good. There has been a lot of interest lately on the Semantic Web mailing list because of a upcoming paper that I think is being presented at WWW, which I think we referenced last week, perhaps.
Yeah, actually, I'd like to get that into the minutes if we didn't, because...
See if I can find it here.
It looks... maybe we did talk about it. Dave Longley has taken a look at it, and I think noted that it is very similar, if not almost exactly the same in some respects, as the algorithm that he implemented many years ago. So that's good. The good thing about the new paper is that there is solid mathematical proofs and theory behind what was implemented. So
that's the paper.
Should give us some amount of formalization around the algorithm that we didn't have before. But you know, huge kudos to Dave Longley for figuring it out years before this thing came out.
Thanks.
the other thing that's really interesting is that this graph normalization work wasn't referenced at all in the paper, which was, you know, surprising.
I think it's because I think when I responded to it, there was a David Booth had commented on it. He was completely unaware of this algorithm. So I think perhaps the fact that it was so closely related to JSON-LD either caused it to be ignored or discounted as being something that was JSON-LD or JSON normalization, when in fact it's not at all. It's entirely based upon RDF datasets. I think it's just a matter of lack of PR getting it out there. So I think it has been promoted a little bit more, although I haven't seen a response specifically from Aidan Hogan, the author of this paper. But I do think that getting this into its own group can allow us to recruit people like Aidan and David, perhaps, who have long-standing interests in these issues, but aren't interested, say, in other aspects of credentials, at least aren't at this point.
Yep. All right. Anything else that we need to discuss on normalization before we focus for the last bit of the call? All right. Community group focus. We have a number of documents that we need to get in better shape before we move forward. I think all of us can feel comfortable pushing W3C management or going out and doing recruiting and pushing W3C management to take the documents that we have and hand them over to a working group. So I'm going to propose a list of documents that we should put as priority number 1, 2, and 3 over the next couple of weeks. And then let's have a discussion on what folks think. Okay, so Greg, if you don't mind scribing this stuff. I think the first priority is that we have to start the recruiting cycle. It's the assumption is that it is going to take up to 3 months to really get everyone up to speed and involved. Remember that the recruiting cycle, we're trying to achieve three things with the recruiting cycle. One is to convince the W3C membership internally that credentials are worth tackling at W3C. Two, it's to get new W3C members into the group because the W3C management likes to see new membership come on board when a new activity such as this picks up and takes shape. So the second thing that's important is get external folks involved in W3C in a direct way. And then the third thing that the recruiting activity has to do is we have to bring these external organizations, both internal and external organizations, up to speed with where we are so that they're comfortable with starting with a working group instead of trying to kind of put the brakes on what we're doing and doing background research for 6 months to 12 months to see if, you know, to see what we want to do. So we have to be fairly aggressive with, you know, this is where the technology is today. This is what we would like to standardize. You know, are you on board or not? And if you're not on board, is there any way that we can convince you that this is the right path forward? So the degenerate case that we're trying to not fall into is the typical W3C process of creating an interest group to kind of talk about what should be done. And so that's why we've been operating for a year plus, is to kind of get all that stuff together. I think the missing document that we have, I'm gonna pull the trigger on getting W3C membership on board. We have an executive summary document. We have relationships with a number of W3C organizations. And so we can do internal recruiting starting this week with the executive summary, the use cases, and the questionnaire in their current form. So that's the first stage of recruiting. The second stage of recruiting is going to be going after organizations, large organizations like, for example, Parchment and National Student Clearinghouse and other organizations that are not W3C members to try and get them to join the work that we're doing. What we need that we don't have there is just a high-level executive summary of credentials and how the W3C works to create standards for the web. So we need somebody to write that document. and we're not going to be able to do that kind of recruiting until that document's done. The idea is that we take that document, give it to the potential recruit along with the questionnaire on whether or not they want to join W3C or whether or not they're supportive of the work. And that's basically the final phase of recruiting. Once we have the questionnaire filled out on whether or not these groups want to join, the next thing that we need to do is convince them that the plan that we have is would work, meaning, you know, that the fact that we have the Badge Alliance working on the OBI vocabulary to define these education credentials, plus the identity credential specification that outlines how you store and retrieve credentials, that if we do that as a first step, we're well on our way to making this the default way that credentials are stored and exchanged, both over the web and in the real world eventually. Okay, so let me stop there and see if folks have any questions about recruiting or the things that we need for recruiting. Did we miss anything?
Well, I'm just thinking about the sequence and the, you know, the documents, because you said a lot there. Maybe pausing between documents would help. But it seems like the flow is, tell me if this is wrong, that, and this is Richard, by the way, that first, credentials need a standard. That's a statement of advocacy. Second is that the WC3 is the right place to develop this standard. The third statement is the WC3, a specific credentials group with inside the WC3, wherever we're going to place it, is the right group to do it within WC3, and we need advocacy to create it. And third, we need WC3 existing and new members to populate it to make it successful. And then the last one's more the technical, you know, things you've just mentioned. So I don't know how to characterize those yet, because I was still thinking about this framework. It seems like you need a document at each one of those, and maybe you said that, but maybe not in that order. What do you
think
of that
approach? I think
you said it
much, much better than I did, and I think that's fantastic. So.
I get to listen while you talk. That's my advantage. So it's hard to do both. So I mean, I think if we had a document for each, at least a section of a document or something that answered those questions, you know, do credentials need a standard? Yes. Why? Here. So the reasons. And we, yeah, and I can work on this. I was going to contribute that we've already tried to work on a letter to the people we've volunteered to recruit, and I got to get that in my hand and see what we said, because Gary and Amy already wrote it for our group and have started recruiting people a little ahead of time. So I'll get that, and then maybe we can turn it into something that looks like this with help from that framework.
That would be fantastic. I think that would be fantastic, and the sooner that we can do that, the better.
All right. I'll do some work on that, although I'll need help.
Okay. So are there any other volunteers to work on that document? The backup is always myself and Dave Longley, but as I said, we're under an immense amount of pressure right now to get this other stuff done.
I can help next week.
Okay. All right. So how about this? Richard, you'll poke around in your organization and get us some core material. I think the structure that you outlined is perfect, so we will write the document with that structure. With input from ETS, and then maybe get it refined by the end of next week, and hopefully we'll be able to send it out by the week after next.
Right, and the reason I set it up this way is you already have answered some of these and have documents on it, and specifically, you know, like the W3C, you know, like why are they a standards body? I mean, it's they already have documents on these things, and what does it take to become a member? You have those chunks, right? That you've already written or that are available from them. So that was why I was thinking it was more of an assembly than it is a lot of writing. Is that wrong?
I believe so. We haven't had a chance. Yes, there's tons of content out there. We just need to boil it down into a one-pager or maybe a two-pager at most.
So before I go, let me, because I got to run to a meeting, but so if you have things that you think are the source documents that I could help synthesize, just put them in a bundle and send them to me or point me to them, and I will use those to kind of create a framework that has the chunks already in it. I'll cut and paste, and then we can go from there. Easier to edit than write.
Yep, absolutely. Thank you, Richard. I appreciate the help there. We have 2 minutes left on the call. The other thing that's important is for us to make another pass on the use cases document. That's the only document that I think we really need to get into good shape at this point. The thing that comes after use cases is deriving requirements and then basically deriving basic capabilities. But we have time to do that because if a new credentials group is created, it won't be created until September, late September. So we have time to kind of do that stuff. But it all starts with the use cases stuff. So I think Nate, Carrie and Sonny, or Nate volunteered Carrie and Sonny and himself earlier in the call to work on those documents. So please try to make a couple of passes over those documents by next week, and we'll talk about those next week. Okay, I think that's it for the call today. Is there any other business, anything else that we should discuss or be aware of before the call next Tuesday?
Nope.
One thing I was going to ask, Mona, is when do you think we'll be moving that use cases document into respec format?
After Carrie and Nate and them make a couple more passes over it.
Okay.
2 weeks.
So, cool.
All right.
Okay. All right, folks. Thank you very much for the call, and we'll chat again at the same time next week. Have a great week. Bye.
Bye.